I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about testing students. We're going to talk about what we gain from testing, what our children have learned, and we're going to talk about the right ways and the wrong ways to do it. My guests will be Dr. Lori Desitels of Marion University, Kim Piper, the principal of Crooked Creek Elementary School, and Mary Kay Hunt of Pike Township Schools. Please join the conversation. Call us at 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Twitter is WFYI. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by your membership and by Apparatus IT Security, identifying network vulnerabilities to help keep companies secure. More information on security assessments for businesses at apparatus.net. And by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th State University. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about testing students. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Twitter is WFYI, and Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Well, my guests are Dr. Lori Desitels of Marion University. Lori, welcome back to the program.
John, thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here today.
It's good to have you back. Kim Piper, who's the principal of Crooked Creek Elementary School.
Yes.
Kim, welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you for having me today.
Certainly. It's great to have you here. And Mary Kay Hunt, I got it right, Pike Township Schools. It's good to have you here as well.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to the dialogue. Thank you for having us.
Certainly. Well, I want to start with, a premise here, just to get us into the subject, and I have a feeling a lot of people are going to be interested in this. Why do we test students? I mean, what is the reason for doing it in the first place? I like to start with basics. Lori, I'll start with you.
Well, I think the simple reason for testing is to inform our instruction. We want to learn about how a child takes in information, how they process information, and how they retrieve information. And then we want that information to direct our instruction with them.
And some of it, though, and that is the instructional. I don't even know how to characterize this, a political or, the argument I hear with legislators and others is that testing is a way of ensuring accountability or making sure that students are learning what we say they're learning. Kim, would you respond to that?
Yes, there are obviously the two different forms of testing, the formative assessments, like Lori just talked about, that we use on a regular basis within our schools to inform our instruction and help lead us into where students may need more enrichment or remediation or reteaching of certain skills. And then we go into what you are referring to, I believe, more of the standardized testing or the summative assessments, where we get toward the end of the year, like we're getting toward now, and really looking at the application of those skills that we've taught throughout the year and making sure our students have acquired them and can apply them. And that is where, again, in different areas and different states, we look at that as an accountability measure for our teachers and our schools.
That second kind of testing, the accountability testing, Mary Kay, how big a process is that? How much of the school time does it consume?
As we are going through the school year, in Pike Township, we use what's called acuity, and that helps us to measure how the students are growing with that state standardized test and then make adjustments in the classroom because it's like going to the Super Bowl. You want the students prepared for the final game, so you do what you can.
Well, better than the Broncos.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you want to prepare those students and get them ready. So we also look at the format, so they're familiar with that format. We do make adjustments in the classroom with the formative piece so that when they finally get to that summative, we're ready and have encouraged the students and they feel successful that they're going to do a good job on that test.
How effective are those tests in measuring how well we're doing, Lori?
Well, it's a concern and it's a challenge, so I don't want to be negative today, but I think that we are challenged because they are measuring a couple of specific areas. We're measuring math. We're measuring language, verbal skills. And I have a concern because when I look at education and I look at the purpose of education, we cannot neglect culture, the school mm-hmm. culture. I have a concern because we have to look at the emotional lives and the social lives of many, many of our children coming into buildings that, in all honesty, taking a test is not a priority. Learning in itself is a challenge because of so many other issues that are going on in that child or that adolescent's life.
And I guess in terms of measuring where students really are, and I'm well aware, and I'm sure pretty soon, if I don't say this, listeners are going to start mm-hmm. saying it for me. Mm-hmm. These tests have become, you know, focuses of a great deal of controversy themselves as not mm-hmm. particularly accurate measures on one side, making the argument. There's also the concern that I hear from a lot of teachers that we now spend way too much time testing and not nearly enough mm-hmm. time teaching. Mm-hmm. Kim, could you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. When we go through at least in Washington Township, when we set up our calendars throughout the year, we do, every school, every grade level has a pacing guide that they follow with different standards that they want to cover during the frameworks of time. Through that time, there are formative assessments along the way. So when I look at the accountability piece and the part with ISTEP and is it really testing what we all know, we should have no surprises when we get our ISTEP results back because we've been informed along the way of what we need to do to reteach and help certain students in certain areas. As far as the time giving assessments, I think what we try to do, at least at Crooked Creek, is really use that time toward assessing what we know will help us within the classroom. And not we want to make sure we do devote a little bit of time to making sure students recognize the format of an assessment. But what I tell my parents and I tell my students all the time, writing to a prompt, our students are going to have to do for the rest of their life. To get into grad school, I had to write for a prompt. You know, there are things on there, and really looking at when we look at the part of ISTEP, it is real world application. Now, do we have to take in all the factors that Lori just mentioned? Absolutely. Do I think ISTEP covers it all? No, I don't. But it gives us some information, but again, it should not be a surprise to us because we have spent ample time looking at things throughout the way to help our students figure out where they need that extra push in remediation or enrichment.
We're talking about testing students here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Twitter is WFYI, and Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Well, Mary Kay, in terms of, I think we've agreed ISTEP is part of the – what should a real test to determine, whether we're teaching what we think we are and whether students are learning that look like? I'm going to give everybody a crack at that one. And then I do want to talk about the formative testing, and it sounds like, at least from what I'm hearing there, that this should be much more of an ongoing process than a big Super Bowl-like mm-hmm. event kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So let's start with that.
Mary exactly. The test that our students should be getting is what are they going to have in life? We don't know what jobs are out there for our students today because the careers are all going to change. Testing needs to incorporate critical thinking so that they are problem solving, they're analyzing, they're looking at a situation and being able to work through that situation. It should not be just a standard and being able to find that standard within a skill set. But they need to, that might be part of it. But if we're really truly trying to prepare our kids for college and career, then they need to be able to think through those processes. And the format of that test should be very high level, Knowledge base should not be at a low level. It needs to be a very critical thinking process so that we are preparing our students for those unknown careers that are out there.
It's interesting that you say that, because I'm thinking, and I hope the audience will indulge me in this trip down memory lane, but in my own early academic career when I was in high school, I was an underachieving student, but I did very, very well on standardized tests. Mm-hmm. And I'm convinced part of the reason was I could look at those questions, which often were just a range of choices, and decide very, very quickly whether I knew that or not, and not waste any time trying to figure it out. I'm not convinced those are the skills, though, that get rewarded in life. Mm-hmm. And that, I guess that's what I'm saying, because it is that okay, maybe I could figure this out if I worked on it a little bit, or I can figure out another way to do it. Those are the skills that tend to get rewarded in life. How do we test to determine those?
I want to talk a little bit just about this perceptual data and perceptual assessment.
Sure.
Because when we...
And you probably ought to explain what that is.
Okay. So I'm looking at the whole child. I want to observe. I want to see inside of reading what's getting them stuck. I want to know if there is fear in answering a question. I want to know if it's a word comprehension. I want to know where the errors are. I also want to know what they're bringing into the classroom socially and emotionally. You know, what are their strengths? What are their challenges? What are their concerns on this day? What's the environment? What's their culture that they have been a part of? And it's so interesting because at Marion right now, we have partnered with a high school, inner city high school.
Which one?
And Lighthouse Academy. Mm-hmm. And they had last year their first generation college bound students. So we are now, our undergraduates are mentoring them. And they just came to Marion this week. And the director was telling me that the biggest concern, and we're so pushing this college and career readiness, we're getting them ready at the door. They get to college. But the biggest concern is staying in college. And when you look at the national dropout rates of college freshmen, we have problems like just getting along with a roommate throws you back home, or figuring out planning and organizing your homework. These are those social and emotional skills that they don't have once they're there. And that's a concern. That's a concern.
In terms of the ways we should... You know, Kim, you work with students, obviously, mm-hmm. all the time. If we're going to structure tests, though, to reward more the problem-solving skills and, to a degree, the working through ambiguity, how do we do that?
Well, right now, ISTEP is set up into two different ways, and one is a multiple-choice component, and one is where it's actual open-ended applied skills where students are looking at their information and being able to figure out how to problem solve and apply that. Do I think that's the best way? Not necessarily, in the sense of when we look at college and career readiness, when we look at those certain things, we are trying to really approach situations with students where they're learning to be more collaborative. Mm-hmm. They're learning to discuss things. They're learning to problem solve with one another and not sitting by themselves. Mm-hmm. Do I think we could ever have an assessment like that? Probably not. Because then who are we assessing? You know, what child if they're in that model? But I think
Everyone who's ever taught has struggled with that.
Right.
How do you assess grades for group projects?
Right.
But
right.
The whole thing.
So I think in terms, I do think we also need something we haven't hit on yet is if we do look at growth, and when we look at where a student came in at the beginning of the year and where they're leaving, and I think that's important. But we also need to really include those higher level thinking skills where they are put into those real life scenarios and to use information. Mm-hmm. That does mean a longer period of time for assessing, because those are not the multiple choice Scantron tests that you can take on the computer. Mm-hmm.
It also involve then more elements of subjectivity too in the response?
You know, yes.
Part of that we do this is it's a pretty binary
right.
approach.
Right.
It's either right or it's wrong.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And that's why when I look at the writing prompts or the literature responses or things like that, I appreciate those a little more, because it is being able for the students to put their own thoughts and ideas into things, into how they would solve those issues or ideas within the assessments.
How long, you know, in terms of the I-STEP, how long a test is that? I mean, is it a 2-day or how long?
It depends on the grade level. Third grade takes two different. They take a language arts component and a math component. But there is a section that starts in March that will take up 3 days, but just 60 minutes. 60 minutes is the longest that each assessment is, each test or subtest. And then they'll come back again in May, end of April, beginning of May. To take another.
We are talking about testing students here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. My guests are Lori Desitels of Marion University, Kim Piper of Crooked Creek Elementary School, and Mary Kay Hunt of Pike Township Schools. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about testing students today. My guests are Dr. Lori Desitels of Marion University, Kim Piper, who's the principal of Crooked Creek Elementary School, and Mary Kay Hunt of Pike Township Schools. And really, when we jumped off, we were talking about the amount of time that's thrown at these tests. Lori, I'd like to start a little bit by talking about, okay, if we're going to invest the time, what's the right way? What way should we be testing students so that we get the most useful information out of it?
Boy, if I had one answer to that question, but it
is... Well, that's why we got an hour. Yeah. We can talk about several possible solutions.
I think that whether it's the right way, I think we cannot neglect looking at just this whole culture, even without a student present. You know, when we look at how colleagues collaborate, when we look at the relationship piece, and when we talk about measuring that, it absolutely is more subjective. But the teachers that I've worked with in Washington Township in the fifth grade do this as well as teach, you know, with instruction that is looking at the multiple choice and the writing and the reading passages. But they also tap in creating a learning profile of each student, looking at, okay, what is John's strengths? What is he doing really well right now that we can key in on English language arts or in science? You know, what is the interest level? What are his passions? And how can we bridge those? So as I was thinking about the show today, I thought, and this is not a new idea, but creating a learning profile, if we can't do it for 140 students or even 24, maybe we take our those most vulnerable, those top five, and we look at, you know, here's where they're really successful, here's where they're challenged, and how do we bridge that gap? And I think when we look at even the teacher growth model and look at evaluating teachers, I see such benefit in creating a classroom culture and saying, this is my class this year in second grade. You know, I have these students with special needs. I have these students who are challenged with a low socioeconomic, you know, with resources, and just giving the building administrators almost a profile of each class.
Are there any sort of built-in equity issues or inequity issues in terms of the testing? Are there certain students, Mary Kay in Pike, who struggle more with these tests, or you think it's not a particularly accurate reflection of where they are?
Some of our students have not been out of their neighborhood, and so when some of the mm-hmm. questions are broad and worldly, it's hard for them to understand what that question really is about, and they'll take some typically, when a student reads a passage, they're taking their background knowledge and they're looking at that passage and trying to figure out what's going on. And a lot of our students that have not had a lot of experiences outside of the township, even downtown Indianapolis, struggle with answering those questions because they just don't have the background knowledge to help bridge that gap to help them through the test.
And it's not necessarily a reflection then on intelligence or even accomplishment. Yeah, you were saying that, for some reason I was remembering, long ago when I was in the newspaper business, I used to volunteer at an IPS mm-hmm. school here in the city that had really not many men involved in the school. It was teaching, particularly then, was a largely female profession, and a lot of those kids needed a male presence mm-hmm. in the school. And I remember some buddies and I from the paper, along with a couple of the teachers from this school, took several of the kids to the IU natatorium, and one of the boys walked in there out onto the mm-hmm. deck of the pool and looked at me and said, "Is this an ocean?"
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I thought, okay, that tells you all you need mm-hmm. to know about mm-hmm. sort of the cultural constraints. We've gotten a question, comment from a listener via Facebook. And if you'd like to reach out to us through Facebook, do so at No Limits WFYI. This is from Benjamin, who says, "I am wondering what your opinions were of testing psychological impact on students. Constantly being reevaluated, being given number scores to differentiate between each other, telling them that they're not good enough to do this or good enough to do this, etc. Don't you think grades and testing really put students back psychologically and socially?"
That's a concern Lori. For me, and I feel like I've said the word concern a lot, and I don't. But I look at, and I've actually seen it in the classrooms, in the elementary schools that I've been inside, and then I see it from first and second year teachers and my graduate students, and I see the stress. And you know, when you are a 7 or 8 year old or a 10 or 12 year old, and you come to school. And you are required, which, you know, that's we all have things that we're required to do. And we go to school. But when you're not feeling successful and mm-hmm. capable, and that is day after day after day, and then the test appears mm-hmm. and you've given it, you know, from your perspective and from your mind and heart, you've given it 100%. And that feeling of I'm not enough is devastating. Mm-hmm. And but. I hope we can talk about some of the things that teachers can do, real positive things, before the show ends today that can really combat that.
Well, and I guess that I think that's Kim's cue, actually, is we'll say, you know, in that case, particularly with some of the standardized mm-hmm. testing, mm-hmm. we try not to say this, but the structure does lend itself to winners and losers mm-hmm. kinds mm-hmm. of interpretations.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And if that's the case, no one sane wants children to think of themselves as losers. How do you cope with that, with the kids whose scores haven't been mm-hmm. as high as either they would hope or you know, even if they're high? I mean, I've seen kids burst into tears because they got a 93, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. So.
Right. I think what we try to do is really make sure that they are comfortable in advance with format. They've had some exposure to what the format looks like. So when they get into that setting, it's not a total stress mode that they're in. We make sure that the testing is not all given all throughout one whole day, so they are not focused on that all day and they are sick to their stomachs all day and things mm-hmm. like that. The other thing we really have worked hard on this year with the help of Lori in our school and in years past with just research is really looking at, we know we have to do it, mm-hmm. so how can we make it the most brain compatible that we can? Mm-hmm. And looking at, what do you do prior to that assessment so the kids are calm and relaxed and focused on what they're doing? What can you offer? You know, all of our classrooms at our schools do a morning meeting every day to talk about things that are going to happen for the day and make sure that those are addressed. And so students have that time to release information when they are stressed prior to even sitting down. I'm not really answering your question because your question is how do we feel when we get the results back?
Well, no. That my question was much more student focused.
Okay, because the other thing we do with students is we want to make sure they understand how they did, but we also want them to understand that that's one piece of data. And yeah. that's after the fact.
Mm-hmm. And that they're still valued mm-hmm. regarding mm-hmm. that.
And now we need to look at, right, maybe you had some holes in some certain areas, but my job as an educator is to fill those and make sure that you're ready to move on for the next level or whatever you're working on at this point.
We are talking about testing students here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Susan, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello. What's on your mind?
I just returned from 4 years in Europe with children that were in school there. There was very limited multiple choice testing there. Almost everything was written answer, essays, short answers. My boys that were in school over there both expressed the idea that it's very easy to take a multiple choice test now. You don't have to be nearly as prepared for one because the answer will always be in front of you. But taking a fill-in-the-blank, short written answer, essay, and they're a little frustrated. They've been frustrated with all the test preparation that they go through here because it really doesn't mean much to them. And my question is, does the American system, with all these multiple choices, and I know kids in high school that do all test preps for these things, does it really teach our kids? And my boys who actually were in a school where when they took a test had to study very hard because the answer wasn't going to be in front of them. It was going to be in their head. They were going to have to write it down. Mm-hmm. So that's my question. We're looking at testing and preparation for tests that maybe aren't really teaching the right thing in our school systems.
Good question. Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call, Susan. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll throw that one to Lori first.
Well, it's an excellent question. And so I've got a couple of different perspectives here. I'm kind of smiling and laughing because my undergraduates asked for multiple choice for their midterm. And we talked about that. And, you know, multiple choice testing is one facet of testing. But I would agree with you, Susan. You know, it sometimes doesn't call us forth to really learn the material deeply. In fact, I know my own two daughters have said, "Mom, I memorize the information I need for my AP history, my AP social. I memorize it, but boy, ask me 24 hours from now, and I'm not going to know it." Mm-hmm. And that's a concern too, because we want this material, this content, to be applicable. We want them to take it into their next, you know, vocation, their career. So your question's an excellent one, and I think that we have work to do. I think we can make progress. We still are looking at testing as a finality, mm-hmm. a product, and I would love to see the emphasis be on more of the process.
Does it undermine, and I guess I want to pick up on that point, mm-hmm. does it undermine to some degree, you know, the whole premise of education and the whole premise of learning? And I say, you know, one of the things I struggle with in my own teaching, and I ask the audience's indulgence here. Normally, I just try to ask the questions. But what I find at the college level is that there are a lot of students who come in and they have a very transactional approach to learning and classes, you know, and mm-hmm. the nature of that transaction is they come in and they expect me to tell them exactly what they will need to know. I then test them on that. They spit back exactly what
right.
I have
mm-hmm.
said.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And their feeling is, okay, after that, we're done. Mm-hmm. And I will never have to think about this mm-hmm. ever again mm-hmm. or engage with this, which at least to my mind undercuts the whole idea of learning mm-hmm. and of figuring out. Mm-hmm. Mary Kay, you're the one nodding your head most enthusiastically, so I'm going to throw that to you.
The problem with education is that we still are in the 18th century of learning. We teach the way we were taught. We haven't progressed. We still acquire or look at low-level knowledge as the way to teach students, and they parrot it back. And that's why we've really got to look at the higher-order thinking skills, have our students more thinking critically and looking at problems and analyzing those problems. We need to look at formative assessments as a way to drive our instruction and change what our students need so that we're meeting their educational needs, not just giving them some kind of topic. They regurgitate it and we move on to the next. That's not learning. That's just memorizing and taking it on. Education needs to change because our students need to be critical thinkers and being out there globally.
We are talking about testing students here on No Limits. Please join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881 or shoot us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Jennifer, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
My question is about more advanced learners in the classroom who are kind of left twiddling their thumbs when they've already mastered the information that's going to be on the test. and yet the teacher is still going over and over it to make sure that sort of the lowest common denominator in the class will be able to perform as well, so that it reflects well in the school. It seems that, you know, brighter kids or kids who learn more quickly really are kind of neglected in that sense. What do you think of that?
Thank you very much for the call and the question. Kim, I'll throw that one your way.
Sure. Really, what we are trying to do, in fact, I was just in a class today where they did an awesome job at this, is really looking at always in every single way what type of differentiation you can do within that, with pre-assessments and working with small groups. And so in making sure that not one student or one group of students is neglected or left out just that way. The struggle where it comes in is, I think, when you're through this whole conversation, when you're looking at ISTEP or a standardized assessment at the end, that what we have to realize is ISTEP does not fully match, doesn't look like what we do every day in the classroom. And they are taking those skills and applying it to ISTEP, but never would I hope that I would walk into any classroom in my building where they are sitting there and all they're doing is focusing on what ISTEP is and what it looks like and all of that, and not teaching new things or incorporating those higher level thinking skills. And I think that's where, you know, you get down to this time frame right now when ISTEP is in 2 weeks and you're or a week and a half, and you do want to make sure kids know the format and things like that. But through differentiation, and all of our schools at this point have what we call a response to instruction and intervention model, where we can look at individual students and determine what they need and where they need to go. And at least at Crooked Creek, we have data meetings all throughout the year with teachers where we can look at individual students and make sure they're getting what they need at their level, so no one is left out. Because the last thing we want is exactly what you're talking about, where they've assessed out of something or they've already mastered the curriculum and they're sitting through it again.
How much of the way we structure these tests is because this is the kind of information that is easy to collect? Mm-hmm. Rather than necessarily the information that would be most useful to us in determining how students, Lori.
Well, it's and again, this has been so overused. It's that factory model, you know, yeah. Mentality. We've all heard that 1,000 times. But wanted to talk to or to respond to this listener too, and Kim, that this looking at scaffolding and differentiating this instruction for those higher level learners who are desiring, you know, different types of higher thought processes is where that brain compatible teaching comes in. And we've actually
Let's talk about what brain compatible teaching is real quick.
Okay.
Too.
So
we've tossed that term around. And
yeah.
We've explained it. Yet.
Right. So we're looking and we're working in Washington Township and Pike Township and looking at the unique brain of every child and how that brain, again, ingests information, how it processes. We're looking at stressors. We're looking at those strategies that incorporate novelty and patterns. And literally, for a student that has mastered, for instance, they've done their constructed responses for their ISTEP reading passages, now we ask them, you know what, you create the problem. Instead of just always solving the problem, take it up a higher level and you create the reading passage. You write the story, create a couple of the key questions, and co-teach this with your teacher. And actually, yesterday, that we were talking about some of the higher level learners in the fifth grade in Washington Township at Nora. And the two teachers that I'm now working with, I said to them, and they knew we have to work together to raise the interest, because we're losing the interest of some of these students that are just being asked to give an answer to the question.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of the way we structure this, then, you know, it sounds like the model should be much more collaborative than they
yes.
are and much more subjective. I'm going to ask a question, though, of the principal. How do you administer something like that?
Well, again,
I notice she takes a deep breath before she answers the question.
Kim's all right.
Thinking. Again, I just go back to ISTEP is one assessment, and I'm lucky to be in a building and in a district where all of our schools at this point are accredited as International Baccalaureate World Schools, and a lot of the assessments they give throughout the year are not tests. They are inquiry-based assessments that students are looking at and researching their own questions, and that's what I would love to see if I could have more of it.
we'll pick that up on the other side. We're talking about testing students here on No Limits. My guests are Dr. Lori Desitels of Marion University, Kim Piper, who is principal at Crooked Creek Elementary School, and Mary Kay Hunt of Pike Township Schools. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about testing students today on No Limits. My guests are Dr. Lori Desitels of Marion University, Kim Piper, who's the principal of Crooked Creek Elementary School, and Mary Kay Hunt of Pike Township Schools. Before we went to the break, Kim, you were trying to... to very quickly wrap up, and I want to give you a little more time to talk about how you administer tests that might be a little more reflective.
And we look at it, trying to incorporate those into all of our units of study throughout the year. Now, granted, those don't come to us for accountability measures. Those statistics are not reported to the state, but they give us a lot of information as to where our students are growing as individuals, as future citizens of our country, and taking care of us later on, and that's our ultimate goal. So we really look at the structure of how we can incorporate some of those higher level, and as Mary Kay mentioned, the international mindedness and global mindedness thoughts of our students into those inquiry-based assessments. And those are administered just at our end of unit assessments within our own school. So again, it's not standardized. It's not statewide, but that's where we feel we get the most characteristic of what in my perception is of a career and college readiness assessment.
We are talking about testing students here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Jacob, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. I'm a big fan of the show. I've always listened during work and even at my lunch break. But I do have question about ISTEP testing. I was a former student in Washington Township, went K through 12 there. And I was actually, I failed the ISTEP several times, the English portion, and I was held back in remedial classes, and it affected me. So my question comes down to what type of policies and what are your plans to help those kids and how they affect them in the end? I was certainly affected, and I was bullied and all that, so that definitely took an impact on me.
And that's the piece. Before I throw your question, I'd like to ask you a question, Jacob, because I think this is on point. In what ways were you affected by it? Could you stay on the line with me for just a second? And are you comfortable talking about that?
Yes, to a point, yes. I was just really bullied. It was a lot of verbal abuse more than anything. I mean, I'm over it now. I've gone to college. I've gotten my degree. I've did a lot better than half those bullies who verbalized abuse and stuff like that. There's never, threatened down or anything like that, but it definitely did abuse me mentally, and that's something that to this day it still haunts me a little bit, but I'm getting over it pretty quickly.
Well, thank you very much for calling in and for sharing your story, and thank you for listening to the show. We'll try to get an answer to your question now. Thanks. Lori, I'll throw that one to you first and then give Kim a crack, too, since it's Washington Township Schools.
Right. I'm not sure about policy, but I do want to add, and I really think that was courageous
of
Jake to call in. And you know, we have to look again at this is an organic system. These are living human beings with feelings and minds, and so are the teachers. And I think this might sound huge to the listeners this afternoon, but we've got to look at this system, and we've got to look at teacher well-being and, as Jacob just said, student well-being. And it's really interesting, and I want to share this with Jacob, and then Kim can talk about Washington Township's policy. But in the New York Times just yesterday, there was an article, and the I believe he was one of the vice presidents at Google, was talking about how there are five characteristics, and this is not new information. Many Fortune 500 companies have talked about the characteristics that they want in their employees. And it's not being an expert in content. You know, it's cognitive flexibility. It's looking at cooperation and collaboration. It's emotional regulation. All of those skills that are so critical to not only getting into a vocation or college, but staying there.
Kim.
Sure. When I and thank you so much again, Jacob, for calling in. Of course, I started listening. Was this one of my former students? So yeah. I don't know. I want to share that I know in Washington Township, we if students do not pass ISTEP, we do take I can speak more at the elementary level because that's where I am. We do have special and I don't even want to say programs in place, but special systems in place to help them and look at the areas where they weren't, that they didn't master, the subcomponents of that assessment they didn't master. The only, right now, when we look at a retention situation is based on the state legislature a couple years ago that was passed on iRead 3, which is a third grade reading assessment. So if students do not pass that, we definitely have things and interventions that are in place to help with that reading comprehension component where they need the extra emphasis as well as summer school. And then they do have the other a second chance to take that before a remediation or a retention is in place. So I will say part of our plan is to look at those assessments when we get them back and see where those holes are and help that child overcome in the areas where we can. So we can we know they are ready at that level to go on to the next level. I can't speak for what happens at middle school or high school because I'm not sure their exact situations that they have in place with those.
We've gotten a question from a listener who did not want to go on the air. It says, are all questions fair for all students? Referencing cultural references or pop culture references doesn't seem fair for all students. What about cultural bias in questions? Mm-hmm. How do we address this? And then more pointedly, what do parents do to address this? I'm going to start with you on that one, Mary Kay.
In Pike, we've had several parent meetings, especially when the iRead test was coming out. We brought in K-3 parents, invited them in, and we did talk to them about the bias of a test and that what they can do is talk to their legislature and try to talk to those people and having them look at the test. Some of the tests, as we talked a few moments ago, are culturally biased in the fact that students may not have the background knowledge to be able to look at that question and be able to work through it. We do our best to expose our students in Pike to the different types of test questions and some of those things from the past ISTEP test. The same thing in Washington Township we do in Pike, and that's looking at those tests, talking to the teachers, really looking at the data and analyzing what's happening there, and so that we're building to the strengths of our students and having them use those strengths to combat any of their weaknesses that they have and try to expose them as much as possible to different genres so that they know what they're going to be seeing when they get to those tests.
We're talking about testing students here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Another question from a caller who did not want to go on the air. How do you connect concepts that seem useless to students, such as algebra and geometry? Oh, we've just angered all of the math teachers in the state. To future success, relevant learning, how to connect to students. Lori, I'll throw that one your way.
Well, and that's actually what we're doing both in Washington Township and Pike Township with looking at these educational neuroscience principles and strategies. Because if the material, the content is not relevant and meaningful to a student, there's no buy-in whatsoever. And the only, we've been telling them, well, it's for the test on Friday, but that's just not enough. So I think anytime we can take the content and make it real world, real time, helping them to look beyond Friday and look to see how might you be able to use this and literally brainstorm with them of ways where, you know what, you're looking at patterns of numbers, you're looking at algorithms, it takes steps. So at some point in your career, at some time, you're going to have to be able to follow logical sequence. In whatever you do, you're going to have to be able to hold information in your mind. I mean, we modify this depending if we're talking to third grade or eighth grade. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we try to make this material extremely meaningful beyond the test.
We are talking about testing students here on No Limits. David, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. How are everyone today?
Good.
Doing thank just you. Fine. What's on your mind, David?
Well, I'm just wondering that since I went through Washington Township, has things changed. It seems like you just spent 12 years of learning various ways to do 1, 2, 3, and ABC, but you really weren't prepared for a job. And if they haven't changed, why not?
Thanks very much for the call and the question. I'll throw that one to Kim since it's another one, Washington Township.
Right. School. Thanks for all the Washington Township callers. We are working really hard right now to prepare every child for a job in the sense of, and exactly what we mentioned earlier, we don't even know what those jobs are right now. We don't know what's going to exist later on when our kiddos get out of high school and college. So our ultimate goal is to make sure that we are allowing them that chance and that chance to be risk takers and keep an open mind into what questions they can ask. I just was in an interview earlier today with a national magazine, and I said the number one thing that I cannot do within my school is to squelch an idea or some pride of a student who wants to try something new and research a new topic and move forward with something that could change their lives and the lives of others. And I think sometimes we lose that idea in education when we have a topic like this that we're addressing so much. But when we go back and look at what our number one priority is to make sure that our students are ready for life. I think that's where we really need to, as administrators in a building and as teachers, look at what our whole day looks like. And we're not just focusing on that test. We're focusing on what application they can do and where they can be critical thinkers and think beyond material presented right there and where they can take further action.
Gotten an email question from a listener who says, love Lori's call for a learning profile in spite of the connotations associated with profiling.
Mm-hmm.
How is assessing performance in the workplace inherently different than academia? What might be borrowed from how they ultimately will be assessed for the balance of their lives?
That's such a great question.
It is. Wow. That's a good one. Thank you for that one, listener.
And I love the comparison that she made with the workplace and with education, because the purpose of education is to live outside the walls of school. So when we look at an employee and an employer, we look at relationship. We look at those higher level thought processes, which I think we need to make very tangible and concrete before this hour ends today. You know, looking at, again, how can we enhance that long-term learning and those problem-solving skills by giving students an opportunity to not only solve a problem, but to create the problem and to come up with different scenarios that they can actually take into a summer job. This is one of the things that we've talked about when we look at brain compatible teaching and learning is, if you're going to do a car wash business as a 14 or 15 year old in the summer, you're going to detail cars, then why not take that a step further and really charge maybe 5% more, but donate 15% to the customer's favorite charity, and really differentiate how you're going to create a business. And look at your resources, look at collaboration, look at cooperation, and look at service. And that could be a whole nother show talking about service. Mm-hmm. We could integrate that with assessment and the well-being of all of us. But I think I don't know if I answered that.
Well, and that's a good setup, because I think in this last, we're down to about the last 4.5 minutes here.
Okay.
I'd like for us to talk about, we've talked an awful lot about what testing is right now.
Mm-hmm.
And what might be wrong with a lot of it. Let's strip the system down and say and start over. If we're going to test, how should we structure those tests? Give me really concrete examples, if you could. Mary Kay, I'm going to start with you.
The very first thing we need to do is we're looking at tests. It's the project. If it goes back to the caller a few minutes ago, students need to have inquiry-based projects. That's what life is about. It's putting together, looking at a problem, solving that problem, analyzing it through, working in cooperation with one another. The tests need to be formatted that way. Kim's talked about Washington Township and how the schools look in, within her walls, the classrooms, and that's how all education is. We get into education to educate students, to prepare them for the future. So as we're looking at the future, we're looking at tests. We need to make sure the tests mirror what we expect our students to be able to do when they get out into life. It would be a very hard test to create, but it's something that would be worthwhile for our students. They've got to see the value in what they're doing.
Kim, how would you start with that, building that kind of test?
I would say the same thing. We definitely need the accountability measure, because I think that's that we need to know that we are teaching and the and students are learning. But again, having that open-ended inquiry approach where students are able to maybe read a scenario and go through what problem they would tackle and how they would approach it and what steps they would take and plan it out. I mean, if you think of any project manager in any situation, that's what we're doing in life. And if that's where they can go with that information, and whether it be based on a reading language arts passage or a math scenario when they're at a store, you know, something where we can outline what they're doing and their thought processes behind it.
Lori, build me the perfect test.
So the perfect test.
Yeah, in just a couple of minutes.
Okay.
Build it perfectly.
All right. The perfect test has not been designed. I can't even tell you what that looks like, because here's my idea. I think that parents and educators and students should be designing that test together. And this, in 2 weeks, we're going to be taking a midterm for my undergraduates. Mm-hmm. And they actually are going to be collaborating with me. And we're going to be looking at what's the most significant, important content that they need to learn and learn deeply to take into real world, real time. Now, there will be topics on that midterm that they don't want and that they don't know well. So it's not a matter of catering to anyone, but it's looking, instead of competing, it's looking at collaboration, cooperation. So that perfect test for me is designed by teachers, not politicians. It's designed by students, and it's designed by school leaders and parents.
We've gotten, it looks like a tweet from a listener who says, given current financial state of American households, when will a personal finance class be standard curriculum?
Wow.
That is
so,
a great question.
Yeah, we've got a smart audience here. So I'll throw that one to Lori real quickly.
Well, I think that is an incredible question, and that's a life skill that actually should be at the top. I mean, looking at, I have a 22-year-old son who just writes checks right now and does not realize that he doesn't have money in an account. And I don't think he's the lone ranger there. So I'm being kind of funny, but I mean, that's a huge priority. Those are those life skills that we need to manage our...
And painful lessons to learn
and
out
painful
of school.
Lessons to learn. Absolutely. Absolutely.
How much of this, Kim, and we've got just a little bit of time, is... you know, that the testing hasn't caught up with really where education is right now?
I think with the assessments we're giving, they're trying. Mm-hmm. They're trying to make them more real-world application. They're trying to make them more open-ended. They're trying to incorporate more nonfiction and fiction text, so it is more balanced that way. I think the issue comes with finances and time as to when can we give this assessment to have, if it is all open-ended, to have it graded in time, to have it checked in time, to get you the results back in a timely manner. And I think that's where we kind of shortchange ourselves when we go the multiple choice route, because it's quicker.
Mm-hmm. Great point.
And I'm afraid that will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Dr. Lori Desitels of Marion University, Kim Piper, the principal of Crooked Creek Elementary School, and Mary Kay Hunt of Pike Township Schools. We'll be back on Thursday when we're going to be talking about service organizations. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.